Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, acclaimed singer and actress Chandra Carelli is here to chat about the new season of Bruh. We're also celebrating Black Music Month with a spotlight on singer and songwriter Brandon Jay. He's here to chat about his newest single and appearing on NBC's Songland. And closing out the show is award-winning producer and documentarian Deborah Riley Draper. She's here to chat about directing OWN's spotlight series, The Legacy of Black Wall Street, and much more. I'll also be playing music from Chandra and Brandon, as well as throwback sounds from Babyface and Whitney Houston. But first, here's an important message from the Life Lux Jazz Festival.
Life Lux Jazz Experience, a proud supporter for WCLK programming, is back November 4th through the 8th, 2021, in Los Cabos, Mexico. There will be performances by Jeff Lorber, Avery Sunshine, Confunction, Raheem Devon, and a Spirit of Jazz Brunch featuring Bishop Marvin Sapp. Ticket information and a full schedule of activities are available at LifeLuxJazz.com.
Wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man, Ray Cornelius, up front, 91.9 WCLK.
You just heard melodic sounds coming from Chandra Carelli. The part-time vocalist, part-time actress, is back as the fiery and feisty Alice Watts in Tyler Perry's popular BET Plus series, Bruh. Now in its second season, Bruh continues to examine dating, careers, and friendship in contemporary society for a group of college friends in their 30s. I caught up with Chandra earlier this week to chat about her character, as well as returning to the stage this summer and her love for Dinah Washington.
Now let's get into this new season of Bruh, which is back on BET Plus. And when I was doing my research, I mean, everybody loves this show. They really love the camaraderie and the brotherhood amongst the actors. And of course, everyone loves your character. What do you enjoy the most about playing Miss Alice?
Her freedom, you know, the freedom to say and just be in real time and not worried about what somebody thinks about what you're saying or how you think about what you're saying. You know, I mean, I just love the freedom. And as a matter of fact, the second season, I just feel like I'm having so much more fun with her because I don't take myself too seriously, you know? And it's like, I think that's the way Alice feels. She doesn't take herself too seriously. It's just like, okay, I got my things, but you know what? Basically, I just like to have fun. You know, I like to get up under people's skin and I enjoy it, you know? So I'm really loving this season. You know, it's a dramedy. So we got a little drama in it, just a little bit more. And I think because now, you know, people kind of know and used to the character Alice, they'll have more fun with her instead of trying to figure her out, you know.
Exactly. And those of us that know you, when I see you in this, I'm like, oh, she's having a ball. She's really, you're saying things that you normally don't say in real life. But I'm like, and I got to ask, was there someone that inspired Alice, or did you kind of pull her from someone in your own life, in your real life?
Well, you know, I've seen so many different kind of characters, being an entertainer, being, you know, a stage entertainer, performing, and I meet so many different people, but it is a person in my family that's similar to Alice. You know, I just think Alice is a little bit more fun than she is because I think she takes herself seriously. But immediately when I read it and I heard the voice, I heard her. And it's a relative. And so, you know, they always say, you know, you can pull from somewhere from your own experience. And that is so true. That is so true. I can't say her name because, you know, I got good fan reunions.
Absolutely. You know, this show is centered around four African-American men, which when you look at the television landscape, I think it's really the only show on television that has that aim, that has that focus. So what is that like being on a show during this time where so much focus and so much attention has been on Black men, not necessarily in a positive manner, but just kind of brings out so many different aspects and so many different colors of who we are. So what has that been like being on this show?
It's great to see the unity between Black men and just seeing how important their relationships are to each other. I mean, we understand the relationships with women, you know, the mothers, the sisters, but how they are with each other and how they have to be there for each other. And I said, I love the fact that, you know, one's a doctor, one's a lawyer, one, you know, one's an architect and one's an entrepreneur. They have his business with his mother, but that they're not entertainers. They're not athletes, you know? So the choice being so broad, I mean, it's one of those type of things, but I don't think people see that much successful Black men who are in these different industries. So I really love that. And I love working with them because they're not too different from that. I think, you know, being together, they have a chemistry because it's real to them, because they're, you know, they've become real friends. And so they'll see more of the chemistry this second season because now it's the relationship is layered. And so they can bring that to the screen.
I want to, Chandra, you know, this month we are celebrating Black Music Month. Black music is so much a part of who we are, especially when I think about moments, they're kind of tied to songs. And a couple of years back, you had an opportunity to portray the incomparable Dinah Washington in a stage musical, Dinah Was. What was your favorite part of that? Or let me go back. What about Dinah Washington that drew you to this show?
You know, Dinah Washington, it's funny. Nothing is an accident. And when I was a young girl, you know, we had LPs. And so it was a particular LP that my mom had that had this dark skinned lady on it with a tiara. And I identified with her. And, you know, dark and she was beautiful, but it was just something in those eyes. It was just something about her. And it was Dinah Washington. And I remember my mother playing the record and me liking it kind of whatever. But when I did my nightclub act, I put In the Dark by her. It's a blues song, In the Dark. It's like it's this blues song or whatever. Never did I know that I would end up auditioning for the show, for the actual musical. And that was one of the songs I auditioned with. He wanted me to do, I did a Dinah Washington song. And then, which he wasn't even really that familiar with, but he loved it. And then he wanted me to do something that was like kind of free. And I ended up doing a Duke Ellington song or something like that. But it was no accident. So I was attached to her anyway. You know, I was just, it was something about her having to be, and especially a dark-skinned woman in this industry. And so when I got a chance to tell her story, it was, you know, it just flowed. It was so natural for me.
And what is one of your fondest memories of that show?
Wow. It's so easy for me to say. It was at the end of the first act, and I did This Bitter Earth. And it was show-stopping. Just incredible. It's one of her strongest, deepest songs, This Bitter Earth, because it just tells the truth. It's not, you know, I know she do What a Difference a Day Makes. I mean, that's one of my favorites too. And it's a long story about that and how she felt about that song because she wanted to cross over. But This Bitter Earth just tells so much of her story. You know, about how time changes. We get older, you know, and how we have to adapt to how we change. And it's just what it is. It's just the truth, you know, and sometimes the truth is bitter. It's bittersweet. You know, it's so funny how it can be the same thing, but it can. Yeah.
You're going to be performing at City Winery here in Atlanta next week. And again, we mentioned at the top of our conversation, getting back on stage, being excited. What can fans expect from you at this show?
Well, I'm going to introduce something to them that for me is historic, that I've never done. And it's another level for me. And so I'm going to introduce that. I haven't really told anybody about it. Something that I've been working on. So I think they're going to just be blown away. They're just going to be blown away. I'm going to do, I always do a mixture of my songs, and I also always do some kind of homage to somebody that I give credit to. You know, it could be Roy Ayers, or it could be the SOS band, it could be Tyler Perry. You know, I always do something to call those people out, because without that connection, my dance would be different. And I love my dance. And so I'm grateful, you know. So I always call their name.
Go to WCLK.com to watch the trailer for Bruh and to get more information about Chandra Carelli's City Winery performance.
Money.
Wow.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you.
I feel like I just watched all your dreams come true on your face. That
My
was great.
Dreams are literally.
Oh.
Literally coming true right now. Yeah. Like.
Woo. Hi, Cassie Davis here. You're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius. Take it away, Ray.
You just heard the voice of my next guest, singer and songwriter Brandon Jay, as a contestant on NBC's hit series, Songland. The Atlanta-based performer has worked with a number of known and unknown talent within the entertainment industry, and now he's coming from behind the scenes and into the spotlight with the release of his newest single, Look at Me. I caught up with him earlier this week in between recording sessions to chat about the hit tune and appearing on Songland.
It was probably one of the best moments of my career. It came at a time where I tell everybody I needed it. You know, as a creator and a performer, and really someone in this industry, you hear so many no's, you get so much rejection. And sometimes after a while, it can get discouraging. So Songland came to me at a point in my career where, of course, I had some wins, some successes, but it had been a while since I'd done anything that really I was proud of. Yeah, I was kind of getting to the point where I was, you know, like, okay, is this something that I'm really supposed to do? Is this industry something that I'm really supposed to be a part of? Because I just keep getting, you know, doors closed in my face, or people seemingly, you know, want to work with me, and then things don't, you know, kind of come to fruition. And I was kind of just feeling not good enough. I was kind of feeling low. And so the opportunity came to me, and I initially turned it down. I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I was thinking, because it was an audition process, a long audition process that you had to go through, but they reached out to me, but I still had to go through this audition process. And I was just like, I'm not in a place where I want to hear more no's, you know what I mean? Especially for something that I love to do, which is songwriting. But my mom, she was like, you never know when it's going to be your moment, when it's going to be an opportunity that is going to change your life. And she is a very firm believer that we don't turn nothing down but our collars. She says that we don't turn nothing down but our collars. So she was like, you are going to do this. She literally made me reach back out to the producers and have an interview with them. And through about maybe 2 to 3 months of interviews and an audition process, I ended up getting casted on the show. And I remember the night that they called me, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. Of course, they were in LA, so they were calling me late my time, but it wasn't as late their time. But they called me. I was out at an event, and they were like, hey, the network approved you. The producers want you. We want to fly you out to LA. And it was like tomorrow, but it was like 1 o'clock in the morning that they called me, and I'm like, what? And they were like, you got to be out here for 3 weeks. So you got to pack enough clothes for 3 weeks, and we are going to book a flight for tomorrow. And it was a whirlwind. It was a whirlwind. It really did just change my life. It gave me confidence to pick up my artistry and really become an artist again and write songs for myself and be out on the forefront. And I say the main takeaway that I walked away with doing that show, even though I didn't win my episode, was that I am good enough. I am meant to do this, and your gift will make room for you. Literally, the judges that were on the panel of that show, they told me, they were like, there is a light that walks in the room with you. There's something about you that we just love. We've fallen in love with you, and we just want you in the room. You are, of course, talented, but the joy that you have, they're like, we're all, you know, we all want a piece of that. That's something that we don't come by often. So to hear that, to hear those affirming words, it really was a battery in my path to push me to go further and further. And I've not stopped working since then.
You don't take no oil.
Let's take it back, take it back, take it back. Let's take it back, take it back, take it back. Hey, yeah.
Now let's get into your new single, or your newest single, I should say, Look at Me. What inspired that? Because when I was listening to the words, I was like, okay, I'm feeling this. I'm really digging this. And I love the video too. I thought it was complimentary to the song.
Thank you. And that song was released actually maybe a couple weeks after my Songland episode aired. So that was about 2 years ago, but that song really was inspired by just, you know, feeling like you made it, you know, wanting to make your family proud, your friends proud, but also wanting to show the naysayers that you were able to keep pushing forward and you made it. You made something out of yourself. You're successful. Your name is in lights. You know, you're seeing me on TV. And the music video actually came because there's like a huge K-pop artist. K-pop is so big now. There's a huge K-pop artist in Korea that like posted about my song to all of his fans. And literally like, this was like one day, maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago, the song kind of went viral on YouTube. And that song again had been released like 2 years ago. It was just sitting. It was on YouTube, like the song, but there was no video. And when it went viral, like literally thousands and thousands of views, the actual audio file of the song, we were like, we got to do a video. So we quickly put together a video in like maybe a week's time and put it out. And I'm very proud of it.
Let's talk about songwriting from the standpoint that, you know, you've actually worked with a lot of established artists and you also work with a lot of new artists. Is your approach the same when you're presenting a song to either one?
It can be the same, but then it sometimes can vary. And what I mean is, if I'm working with an artist that's established, a lot of times they have a sound that works for them. So we'll go with their sound, but we'll maybe talk about things that they've not talked about, or we'll explore different subject matters that they've, you know, maybe dealt with, but not really gone deep into as it pertains to the songs that they've done. And then there's sometimes that I'm working with a new artist who they've not developed their sound yet. So we're trying to figure out what is their sound, you know, who are they as an artist, and we'll go in and kind of figure that out. But it always is the same, meaning that usually when I'm writing with an artist or for an artist, I like to talk to them and just kind of really, it's almost like a therapy session. We kind of talk about their life. Like, what are you going through right now? Are you in love? Are you not in love? You know, did you just break up, or are you married? Or, you know, tell me about your friend circle. Tell me about, you know, some of the things that you do on your spare time, because I want to get to know them as an individual outside of the artistry, so that the music that we write and we create is authentic to themselves.
This is Black Music Month, and you know, I've been asking all of my guests their Black Music Month moments or memories, but I wanted to ask you, is there a past album from an artist, dead or alive, that you wish you could have written a song for?
Oh, of course. I have two of them. These are my absolute favorite albums, I'll say, of all time as of right now. But number one is Brandy, Full Moon. And the second one is Usher's 8701. I love both of those albums so much.
Who inspired you to be a songwriter?
Well, my mentor, Jamie Porte, I started singing as a young kid and just doing talent shows and, you know, of course, singing cover songs. I wasn't writing my own music. But I always wanted to sing from my own perspective. But as a kid, you know, not really knowing how to write music or even knowing that I could write music, of course, I had to just sing what was on the radio or songs that my mom brought to me. But I remember going to the studio for the very first time when I was probably about 12 years old. And I met my mentor. His name is Jamie Porte. He taught me everything I know. And he literally was like, you know, you can write your own songs. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. I'm a kid. He's like, no, it doesn't matter how old you are. If you have something to say, then say it. And so I told my mom I wanted to start writing, and she bought me like a little studio setup, something real small, inexpensive, where I could just record myself singing. And I would literally go and like make up random songs that probably didn't make any sense. But I would cultivate that. I would make them, you know, write them random songs, send them to Jamie. He would say, okay, this was a nice idea. Do this better, change this. And it really pushed me to become a songwriter. And then of course, listening, like I said, to Brandy's Full Moon album and listening to Rodney Jerkins' production and the songs on that album, they really inspired me to be able to write something that made me feel as good as listening to that album. So yeah, I think it was a mixture between listening to Rodney Jerkins' production and Brandy's album and then my mentor, Jamie Porte.
Well, Brandon Jay, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. Again, we're talking to an amazing songwriter that I've, you know, been able to personally watch grow over the years and was super excited.
Thank you.
Appeared on Songland and of course going to see your show over at Theatrical Outfit. And to be a part of this new, you sort of stepping out of the shadows and really stepping into the spotlight with this new single. So we're really happy for you and wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
This is for the cool.
This is for the cool. This is for the cool.
Hey, this is Jasmine Guy, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last segment features award-winning documentarian and producer Deborah Riley Draper. She's back to chat about directing the OWN Spotlight series, The Legacy of Black Wall Street. The two-night event premiered this past Tuesday and chronicles the 1921 Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre that took place in the all-black community of Greenwood. The area was also known as Black Wall Street for its booming African-American businesses and affluent residents. Deborah was ecstatic when we talked earlier this week about the project and what fans can expect in this Tuesday's episode.
This is, as you know, my first time as a director and a producer of a television network two-episode special and on the OWN network. So the production company, Trailblazer Production, they knew my work from Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, and when they were looking for a director, they reached out to me and we had a conversation and they had an idea and I had a different idea. And then we came to an agreement that my idea would be a great one to do. and then I was like, I certainly would want to direct and produce this particular approach to telling this story. And that's how it began. And we had these great conversations with these amazing executives at OWN. And we started shooting in 2021. So we were after a lot of the documentaries and series and things had started. But I knew that I wanted to talk to the descendants, and I knew that I wanted to build, if it was going to be two episodes, I wanted to really get into the massacre. On the second episode, I wanted people to see the beauty of Greenwood first and meet the neighbors and meet the community and then come back and understand what transpired. Because understanding what transpired needs to be its own thing. And the buildup to that is what you saw last night. And so that's how I became involved, and that's how I started to think about it. A lot of what we know is just simply the massacre, and there was so much more to this story, and these people were so glorious, and I was fascinated looking at the footage with their cute cars and their nice clothes and their handbags and their briefcases and this 1921, and they're holding things down, and they're all you know, highly engaged about the business of Black business and Black success and cooperative economics and thriving. And I wanted to sit in that for a minute, Ray.
Let's talk about the fact that you had some exclusive interviews with some iconic historians, including the Angela Davis. So what was that like having her on set?
Let's talk about that. let's talk about Angela Davis and sitting down with the one and only Angela Davis in Oakland, where we had that conversation. The second episode, you will see some Angela Davis footage when Angela Davis was, you know, the woman who understood what liberation meant and the woman that was willing to put her stakes in the ground for Black liberation. And that's what that conversation was like. It was like sitting at her feet and listening to her expound upon our freedom and how that freedom is oppressed and marginalized, and how every generation has to pick up this fight until the fight is over. And she really broke it down for me, Ray, in this way that Black excellence is always targeted. Black excellence creates in other people this rage. And they deal with this rage with violence, not with conversation, but with violence and blows against the success of African Americans. It was the most powerful conversation I've ever had, period. And I have such a profound respect for her previously, but it was so incredibly deepened after that conversation. Having a conversation with her is transforming.
You actually had boots on the ground and connected with several descendants of survivors from Greenwood. What was that like encountering them and being there to see the area for yourself?
Well, that was my very first time walking on Greenwood, Archer, and Pine streets. It was my very, very, very first time there. But you can feel the power. I was inside the basement of the Mount Vernon AME Church. They took us down in the basement. And so some of the burned bricks are still down there. Some of the ashes are still there. They did not remove them, so you could actually see that. So seeing and smelling the you know, what was left of the Vernon AME basement, because they had to rebuild the church, but the basement didn't burn all the way down. So you begin to feel the legacy of Black Wall Street, the spirit of Black Wall Street, the soul of Black Wall Street. But there was also for me a sorrow, knowing that men, women, and children were murdered, and that businesses were demolished and generations were cut in terms of potential, in terms of generational wealth, in terms of some dreams. So that stayed with me. So being able to sit down with all of that swirling in my heart and my head made those conversations really intimate. It made those conversations poignant. And it really guided me into asking some different questions.
What can viewers expect in the coming episode that's airing on June the 8th?
Buckle up. The episode 2 is the picks up right in the morning after the first shot was fired at the courthouse. So we'll pick up when African Americans thought, maybe this thing will go away. Maybe this white mob will go home, go to sleep, and this will be over. That's where we pick back up. And as we know, it wasn't over. And there were choices made that would lead to the complete and utter destruction of an otherwise beautiful Black community. That's what they can expect. And then they will see the trajectory of the legacy, and they will begin to be inspired by resilience in the fight to survive and the fight to continue and the ability to see descendants that are there right now.
Deborah Riley Draper, congratulations on this amazing project. The Legacy of Black Wall Street is airing as part of a two-part series on the Oprah Winfrey Network. Again, this is in commemoration of the burning of the Greenwood District in Tulsa, Oklahoma, better known as the Tulsa Race Massacre, and its legacy as Black Wall Street, a historic district that was really the pinnacle of Black success in America at that time. Thank you so much for this contribution, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Chandra Corelli, Brandon Jay, and Deborah Riley Draper. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.